SRI Lankan masses storm capital forcing out president. 2 Senan, Committee for a Workers International. A historic day was marked on the 9th of July in SRI Lanka, when the masses decisively entered the pages of history. People from all around the country descended on the capital city Colombo to register their voices loud and clear. People came and came, and they kept coming. The 9th of July was chosen by protest leaders as a day to get rid of the infamous President Gotabaya Rajapaksa, nicknamed Gota. The mass movement that erupted following the cost of living crisis came to its head on the 9th of May, the day when Prime Minister Mahinda Rajapaksa was forced to resign. He organized an attack on the protesters before he left office. This whip of counter-revolution had sparked the first eruption of anger. Over 100 houses of members of parliament were burned down. The establishment reacted to this and co-opted former Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe, the right-wing United National Party (UNP) leader, to fill the palace of Mahinda. This led to some fracturing in the movement. However, the Gotabaya occupation continued its protest. This continuation, though at a low level, forced out another Rajapaksa on the 9th of June, the infamous Basil Rajapaksa, who was undemocratically appointed as finance minister. But the Rajapaksa family continued to pretend that it had done nothing wrong, and refused to give up the crucial executive presidency position. Basil has declared that he will return soon. All parliamentarians have completely underestimated the enormous anger and hatred that has developed across the country. Despite many obstacles, there was a unanimous feeling that the 9th of July should be the end of Gotabaya and the Rajapaksa family as a whole. The Rajapaksa family has done everything in its power to continue its rule. It added additional security to key places, including the president's official residence, the presidential secretariat, and temple trees, the prime minister's official residence. State intelligence services, together with the police, had started arresting key activists. Various repressive measures were put in place. State-sponsored propaganda was also unleashed in the pro-government media. Once again, it looked like Gota was back in control of the parliament. The majority of the parliamentarians feared the movement and fell in line behind Gota. The 9th of July came, it appeared that Gota had managed to survive the pressure. As a last stand, indirect threats were issued, and a curfew was declared the night before the protest day. But following widespread condemnation and determination shown by those who supported the protest on the 9th of July, the curfew was lifted in the morning. A transport worker strike was also called off to run enough services to allow the protesters to travel to Colombo. For those who could not afford to travel, others paid. Small businesses also sponsored tickets in some places. Eventually, train and bus loads of people descended on the capital. There was only one thing in the minds of all: get rid of Gota. Tens of thousands marched towards the president's house and temple trees with this in mind, and faced several barricades that were set up by the police, special task forces, and the army. Not just one, but many layers. The masses pushed through them. The army fired live bullets at the protesters. A couple of protesters were shot outside the president's house and later pronounced dead. Protesters faced violent and vicious attacks by the special task forces and police. But even this was not enough to stop them. At that point, it was also clear that soldiers were not prepared to risk committing mass killings just to protect the president. Given what had happened on the 9th of May, everyone feared the mass movement and the repercussions if they decided to take them on. When, finally, the masses forced themselves into the president's residence, it was empty. Gotabaya had secretly fled in advance, and, as we write, his whereabouts are still not known. Many members of his family are reported to have now left the country secretly. There were some videos circulated on social media which showed some Gotabaya supporters running towards a ship. Many immigration officers at the airport also announced that they will block any attempt by the Rajapaksa family to leave through the airport. Through their local links in the army and navy, the Rajapaksa family managed to find some secret rescue. The immediate resignation demanded by the protesters was ignored by the president, who dismissed them as extremists. he and the Prime Minister stated that they would consider resigning. Eventually, Gota was forced to accept resignation, but even then he delayed this until the 13th of July. Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe, on the other hand, maintained that he would not resign until a new government is formed. He also clashed with journalists and protesters. Soon after, one of his private residences was set on fire. It should be noted that the main protest was peaceful. Though many had stormed temple trees and other residences, no damage was done to these properties. There was no reported looting. Protesters also found nearly around 18 million Sri Lankan rupees, over £40,000, in cash inside the president's residence. To avoid any accusation of looting, the protesters counted the money and handed it over to the government. Protesters have now defied the bogus resignation of Gotabaya and continued their occupation of the temple trees. They have declared that the occupation will continue until the president resigns and is gone for good. Temple trees has now become a museum. Tens of thousands of people are constantly visiting this palace, touring through the high life these officials had while they were asked to starve. These places, supposed to be public offices, are kept secret behind big gates and heavily protected to keep ordinary people away. This is the first time the impoverished people have been able to have a look. Some even released house tour videos on social media. Following this crisis, Western governments and India urged a quick solution, filling the vacated positions with other parliamentarians, and forming an all-party national unity government. Of course, this is categorically rejected by the mass movement that demands the whole government steps down. Some who support the movement, and have so far taken part, have asked for an interim government to be set up. The United Socialist Party, USP, the Sri Lankan section of the Committee for a Workers' International, CWI, argues that the interim government, even on a very short-term basis, will not deliver on behalf of the struggling masses. Right, is the statement that the USP released. United Socialist Party, CWI Sri Lanka, statement: a tremendous mass movement that the country has not seen before has now made the corrupt capitalist parliament invalid. The promise of resignation of the president and parliament is not enough. Many have instinctively understood that the president is trying to buy time to recover or even regroup. Hence the movement correctly decided to continue the occupation of temple trees until the president resigns and leaves. All sections of the old regime and ruling class must be rejected. Already the West India and other imperialist powers are working with their local allies to push for some sort of all-party representation to maintain the fundamentals of the system and thereby their grip on power. They are trying to reinvent old corrupted politicians as new. None of them have any idea of how to address the current crisis from the view of the struggling masses. Up until the 9th of July, the majority of them were huddled together with both Gotabaya and Ranil, and have accepted that there is no other way than to be hard on the workers, youth, and poor. They are all working together to sell the country's land and resources to vulture capitalists to further fill their pockets. What has changed now? In what way did they change? Do they put forward anything different now? They are enemies of the people. For that reason, they are now stripped off their power by the masses. Why give them back power to revive them? But it is not just a question of just removing the old leaders. There are new politicians who are just waiting for their turn to get their hands on power. Sri Lanka needs a new future. The proposal of an interim government with the aim of giving back power to these enemies of people, or even sharing power, can only help them to recover. The members of the elite who have not yet run away now talk of unity and an all-party government. Yes, we want unity, the unity of the working masses, poor and exploited, to win a better future, but not unity with the exploiters and oppressors. There is an alternative. The masses have shown power, and this power can be coordinated and organized outside the walls of parliament and temple trees. Let us continue to build committees in workplaces, in towns and every village, and strengthen them. Immediately they should organize the democratic distribution of supplies to the population. These bodies can send their representatives to a national body. Let's form a national assembly of these bodies. This interim body can also take control of state affairs, while preparing for the democratic election of a revolutionary constituent assembly. It will truly reflect the aspirations of all sections of society. An interim government doesn't have to have element of the old regime within it. It also doesn't need to include corrupt capitalist politicians. It can be formed immediately by democratically elected representatives of unions, leaders of the protest movement, leaders of peasants and those socialist activists who are in struggle together with the masses, and then be accountable to a national assembly of committees. It is this body that will implement the demands of the protest movement, and develop further from that. If any interim governance includes old element, their main aim will not be to meet the demands of the masses, but instead at kicking the can down the road, and buying time to allow the representatives of the ruling class to regroup and reinvent themselves, eventually defeating the core demands of the masses. They may agree to give some concessions at this stage, after witnessing what the masses can do. But it will not be in their interest to deliver the full demands. Let's not breathe life back into the corrupted corpses by bringing them back into the interim body. We must demand immediate cancellation of all debt. Repayment of macro debt must stop immediately. The capitalists taking their wealth and running away secretly should also be stopped. We must immediately confiscate looted wealth and implement stricter capital controls than what are in place now. These actions alone will give enough money and resources to deal with the immediate shortages of food, fuel and other essential items. Emergency planning committees should be set up immediately to implement an emergency economic plan. We appeal to all those in struggle to reject the all-party coalition body being created from the existing parliament and other pro-capitalist forces. Even if they try to include representatives of the protest movement in the interim government, we must ask what power will be given to us? What role do we play? Is the parliament fully agreeing to the demands that we have advanced? We must not enter any deal on a compromised basis that uses a unity government as a cover for an attempt to maintain the capitalist system, which has failed the people of Sri Lanka and billions around the world.